Okay, we're going to turn to Nehemiah this morning, chapter 1. We're going to start there. It'll be in several different scriptures over the course of the lesson, but I don't want to beat around the bush too much. Just kind of get right into it here. Last week, we talked about the subject of our faulty foundations. Our fundamental character flaws that never get talked about or never get addressed at salvation or during the process of sanctification. As we go through life and we learn, there's some things that really get dealt with that we as Christians nowadays have put so much emphasis on, and then there's some things that have not, that just never get talked about. And they're left up to the... We like to think the truth isn't fluid. That's one of the things that we're, really trying to draw a line in the sand about nowadays. But there's a whole other set of rules we play by when it comes to certain truths that we will or will not adhere to. It's this unspoken law that says you can decide that on your own. It's like there's right and there's wrong, and then there's a category where it's left up to you to decide for you. And that's actually a principle we're supposed to stand against. We claim we stand against that, but we stand against it in other people's lives, but not in our own. And that right there is the open door that the devil just has in and out of our life, and the people that we allow in and out of our life that just are adding to what we are. There's this thing in the bulletin this week. I read it there. It says, your beliefs become your thoughts become your words. Your words become your actions become your habits become your values, and your values become your destiny.
Yes.
And that is exactly what I'm talking about here this morning and this month. You become what you assimilate to, and whether you think you do or not. All right, a couple of points from last week. We all have these flaws. Everybody has their own customized little set of flaws that they have, but everybody has them. All of it. I don't think any of us are excluded from this. These issues are easily avoided because they're easily, the blame for them is easily laid at the feet of someone else. So it's easy, instead of dealing with it in our own personal life, it's easy to just find a place or find someone to throw the blame off on, that, well, I'm like this because this happened in my life, or I'm like this because my parents were like this, or I'm this way because of this tragedy that happened in my life.
Right.
These fundamental things that our character is made of, just like the little quote in the bulletin there, are the things that motivate our actions and in turn become what our actual testimonies are made out of.
Mm.
See, that's what we don't make the connection there, that these things that we are outside of what we consider to be our faith, our religion, or whatever you want to say, are actually what your testimony is. Because how many people do you know that claim to be Christians, but you base their spirituality on the things they do and the way they live their life? Well, that's how we all do. We all do that, and just so you know, so does the world. They don't care what you say you are, they care what you do. Mm-hmm. And they are ignorant of the ways of God in a lot of ways. I mean, they cannot understand them because they're worldly minded. But this one principle carries through steady all the way across the board. It applies to both sides of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
Your walk walks and your talk talks, but your walk talks louder than your talk talks. And that's, they see, for us as Christians, that's evidence of what's happened in our soul. For them, it's evidence of their actual moral character. It's their religion,
right,
in a lot of ways, is that I say what I do, or I do what I say. I'm a man of my word. I pay my bills. I'm honest. I don't cheat people. I don't lie. And see, that's their righteousness. But it is what we're talking about here, in the sense that what you do is what you are, not what you say. Okay? So, last week, that's what we covered. We all got this problem. We got problems. And it's not, anybody can turn up. It's kind of like, I think all of us, and I'm not pointing any fingers at anybody except Mr. Seth here, but like the whole thing with weight loss and the diets and the different things, we've all been down this road, and we'll be successful at it for a while. And then we slowly start to rein it back, or, you know, allow certain things back in. And the next thing you know, we're right back to ground zero where it all began the last time. And then we start the whole process, this whole cycle again. Well, I need to get back on the horse. I need to start walking again. I need to start working out. I need to start, you know, cutting out carbs, or I need to start doing this. And then there's that. But you can talk. But where do most of us stop? Right there.
Yep.
We like to talk about it. I mean, look, it's like, I've, you know, we can have a real good game plan for how we're going to do this. And in theory, if executed, it would work like a charm. But at some point, you have to rise up and throw the Oreos in the trash can. That's hard to do. I always say, well, how about this? I'll throw them away right here, and then we won't buy no more. And then somebody goes to the store in a moment of weakness and comes home with a pack of Oreos. Exactly. And then you're like, well, now what are we going to do? I guess we got to throw these away too. Well, everybody gather around. Let's throw them away. Or I got to go get gas. Who wants to go with me? And before we come home, we've all got an ice cream cone in our hand because that's what we did last night. Because ice cream is good and it's just too available. But that's what I'm saying. We do this. I mean, that's just an example. But think about this on a spiritual level where we do this with the thing. I mean, we hear the preaching and we know it's the truth. We read God's word and he will even reveal things to us, even in our own devotions and everything, that, man, this is a problem I have with this thing that really maybe nobody else really knows about. Maybe they do. Maybe I'm the only one that thinks nobody knows about it. But I need to do something about this. Lord, remind me every time that this comes across my mind or out across my lips, remind me of this. And he will. Yeah. And then you just don't do it.
That's right.
And one more day goes by where this is a part of who you are.
Yes.
And then you become discouraged.
Yep.
Because that's the next step in the process. You'll become discouraged, and before you know it, you're eating Oreos again, spiritually. I mean, you have abandoned your resolve to change this specific thing that God himself has showed you in his word that you need to deal with. And you have become so discouraged because of your own weakness and your own failure to obey, because that's really what it is, that you've quit. And it's somebody else's fault, or it's something else's fault. Or let's just say you just beat your own self up, and I'm my own worst enemy. Well, do you want to live like that forever? I don't want to be fat forever. Looks like I'm well on my way, but I don't want to be. And here's the deal. Suddenly, after time goes by, you think that this is just something that, well, you know, I can live with it, or that extra 20 pounds ain't that big a deal. But then, you know, we start talking about going to the mountains again someday and going hiking and all this stuff we want to do. And the last time we were there, walking flat ground for a mile back to Lewis Lake, and I thought I was going to die. Because that extra 20 pounds, when there's, you know, 30% less oxygen to breathe, is not 20 pounds no more. And spiritually, that's what happens. You wake up suddenly and the demand for you to be in shape spiritually is upon you. And there's no preparing for it. The time to prepare is past. And now it's battle time and you're not ready. You don't have what you need. And now your failure isn't just going to affect you. It affects your kids. It affects your posterity. It affects the people that are watching you for encouragement that you don't even know about. People that are watching you and saying, you know, there's something different about that guy. If there's anybody that's going to make it, it's going to be, I want to be, you know, and they're watching you, and then you fail because of this thing you haven't dealt with or that you won't be strong enough to do it. So I want to start here in Nehemiah this morning. We're going to read in chapter 1. This week, last week it was the problem is the foundation. This week we're just going to talk about build it again. You got to build it again. See, you remember last week we touched on the fact that so many times what happens is that we try to build something new on a foundation that's unstable. Okay? And that ain't going to work. It'll work for a while, but it'll fail, and you lose it all. You lose everything at a time when you're most invested. And so I made the application of it where, you know, at salvation, you have to, everything has to be erased and you got to start over again from the foundation up. Well, here's the deal. Maybe you're a long ways into the build and you're just realizing that there's some things foundationally that should have been dealt with. Well, that's a different ball game. Maybe you're just getting started and you can still see part of your foundation and it's a lot easier to deal with now because you ain't built a life on top of it. But God's made a way for there to be a way to fix your foundation no matter what stage of life you're in. There's ways to shore it back up and to fix it. When I first started working construction, I worked with a guy, and a lot of what he did was reconstruction of damaged existing buildings. Water damage, which, you know, that's something I learned about water damage. Your roof leaks long enough and it destroys the foundation and everything between there and the foundation. But eventually, the foundation, when you go to fix it all, you got to go back. The old schoolhouse in Stewart's Draft, remember they had a restaurant there? Well, they had this structural damage. It was a flat roof, but it was old. Trusses were flat trusses that were handmade with bolts and all that stuff. But they were, you know, 90 years old. And snow load and things like that hadn't been accounted for back so many years ago had broke down a section of it to where the roof was sagging real bad and we had to fix it. Well, there was 3 stories to the basement. But we had to go into the basement and dig a giant hole by hand, like a 5x5x3 foot deep, and then pour concrete in that thing, and then cut a hole through the floor all the way up to that truss in the attic, and then bring steel pipe and sections in there and feed it all in. I mean, it was a trick. It took some serious thought and like engineering to build all the components where they would go in without having to tear the building down. See? And then we were able to shore up that truss, but you had to go all the way to the ground level to do it. And we saved the building. And it's still there. But it took a lot of work and a lot of like fancy footwork. I mean, it took some delicate moves and a lot of extra cost and work and everything to keep it all from just being lost. And, you know, so let's read Nehemiah chapter 1 here. Let's start right there and read a few verses, okay? Y'all know the story about Nehemiah. They'd been in captivity for a long time. And Nehemiah, the whole book about Nehemiah is him going back and then rebuilding what had been lost in the captivity. So it starts out, the words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. And it came to pass in the month of Chisalu in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan, the palace, that's in captivity, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah. And I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said unto me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Now, that's bad news. You know, he hadn't been there in a long, long time. But news came of the ones who'd escaped and got back over there, and they'd got word back to the ones in captivity, and it was just a mess. I mean, their house was destroyed. Their heritage was destroyed. Their ancestors' work and effort and sacrifice was all lost. It was all destroyed. And, you know, and there's a lot of times when you'll find yourself in a situation like that in your own life spiritually, where you just feel like everything that ever has been, the, you know, fundamentally in your life spiritually, I mean, has all been for nothing. And it's all been destroyed by someone else. See, because like I said last week, we always like to categorize things and put them in little boxes and then find someone to blame for this problem that exists. But that's not where Nehemiah stopped. That's where it began. See? Verse 4, it says, and it came to pass when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. You know, where do we begin to right this problem we have with our foundation? I mean, that job I was telling you about, it literally took somebody 2 or 3 weeks of just crawling around in the attic and going down in the basement, doing math and, you know, figuring and, you know, 2 or 3 different attempts on paper that failed before they were able to finally figure out a way to fix this problem. Sometimes things are an easy fix. I mean, and especially if you haven't built a lifetime upon this messed up foundation. But look, well, this is a whole nother rabbit hole and I'm not going to go down it. But, you know, I'm 41 and I'm starting to realize that half my life is over. And I'm realizing it because there's things that I am able financially to entertain the thought of being able to do now. But my life is gone. My time is past. And so, you know, I can sit down and just be, you know, heartbroken or angry or bitter over the fact that I should have done this back then, or I should have, before I did this, I should have done that. And, you know, if I would have just done this instead of that, then, well, if you go down that road, you're going to be angry at someone.
Yes.
That had nothing to do with why you didn't accomplish your goals.
Right.
You know, if I would have had my head on straight when I was 21 years old, then I would have made some different choices that would have been, I would be enjoying the fruits of my labor now, instead of sitting here saying, hey, dummy, what if you'd have done that? Boy, that'd have been a neat thing to get to do. Well, but see, no. Okay, so the next best thing to do is, first thing you got to do is acknowledge the gravity of your problem. Okay? Nehemiah looked at the situation and said, whoa, you know, everything's burned. Everything's broken down. You know, I don't know even where to begin. Well, it's like you talked about last week about, you know, going to the world to find an answer for your problems or going to God to find an answer. If he was the one that motivated you in the first place to even, you know, recognize that there's this problem and you've got to fix it, then why would you go to a worldly or a contemporary or a secular source for advice on how to approach fixing this broken down wall or this foundation that's crumbling out from underneath your home? No. You know, I wouldn't go to someone who mows grass for a living to find out how to repair, you know, and engineer some structural thing to repair a giant building. That guy don't know how to do that. You know, you got to go to the right source in order to figure out. You got to acknowledge how bad it is. You know, I can't, you know, I've dealt with people before that the situation, the problem that they have is going to require this much money to fix it. But they will put a patch on it and make it look okay, and that's good enough. Let's just keep on going. And I've worked for guys like that who did that with their equipment, because if they could just get through one more day, then we'll deal with it tomorrow.
Yep.
And then tomorrow comes and you made it okay yesterday? Well, I mean, yeah, it performed, but this baling wire is going to break any moment. Well, keep on going, and we'll see what, you know. And before it's over with, you're sitting on the job with a crew of guys, and the compressor's broke, and the day's done. You've lost your day, maybe two. It just, you know, I've been there. You got to acknowledge the seriousness of the situation. So Nehemiah, what did he do? He went to God. And he said, I beseech thee, O Lord God of heaven, the great and terrible God that keepeth covenant and mercy for them that love him and observe his commandments. Mm-hmm. You know, first of all, he established that God had not changed.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay? God had not moved. God was the same during this captivity that they were going through as he was before. When Ezra was sitting here saying, you guys need to change or else God's going to send judgment. He's the same. He hasn't changed. And Nehemiah acknowledged that. And he also didn't put it in the context of it, you know, being like God was being unfair or overkilling on the punishment.
No.
You know, you keep your word. You are exactly what you say you are. If anybody's done any changing, it's been us. And we deserve every lick you've give us. Let thine ear now be attentive and thine eyes open, that thou mayest hear the prayer of thy servant, which I pray before thee now, day and night, for the children of Israel, thy servants. And confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against thee. Both I and my father's house have sinned. Mm-hmm. The next thing he did was that he included himself in the accountability for the state of their nation. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at your phone or out the window or wherever you want to look nowadays, and I'm telling you, I'm done. I was just thinking about it yesterday. I'm listening or reading something, and I'm just like, Lord, have mercy. It ain't arbitrary people that I don't know. It's the people I do know that are on here now fighting with each other, and it's unbelievable to me, yet so very revealing, the true colors of these people that I've had kind of held in question for a lot of years. But yep, there it is. You are that. I knew you were that. But see, Nehemiah went through the same situation. See, don't you realize that, you know, Nehemiah was the one of the very few here that was wanting to do right. But he included himself in the accountability for the situation. Mm-hmm. And that means not, oh, he wasn't doing like these white people out here kneeling down on the ground claiming that they're the reason why somebody's ancestors was a slave. That's fake.
Yeah.
It's all a bunch of hoo-yah. He was saying, look, I might not have been the one who rebelled, but I will bear the accountability of it because I'm going to help us get out of this. I will do what it takes so that the next generation isn't captive too.
Yes.
And being willing to do that means being willing to shoulder the responsibility of the problem, whether you're directly guilty of it or not, whether you're directly responsible for it or not. It's real easy for us to say, well, you know, I did teach my kids right. But their friends and my family that ain't Christians, or, you know, people that I didn't know, or social media or all this stuff, they just lured them away and got their heart and poisoned their mind. And, you know, doggone that phone and doggone their friends. And no, look, we are the gatekeepers. And God will hold us accountable. I don't care what the world says. You know, it's not your fault. You got to love yourself first before you can be better. No, Nehemiah didn't. He said, it's my fault. Me and my father's house have sinned.
Yes.
It's the reason why we're in the state we're in. You've not changed. It's been us.
Yes.
You're righteous and we're not.
Right.
You don't make mistakes, and that's all we've done, is done all this wrong. So, verse 7, we have dealt very corruptly against thee, and have not kept the commandments, nor the statutes, nor the judgments which thou commandest thy servant Moses. Remember, I beseech thee, the word that thou commandest thy servant Moses, saying, if ye transgress, I will scatter you abroad among the nations. But if ye turn unto me and keep my commandments and do them, though there were of you cast out unto the uttermost part of the heaven, yet will I gather them from thence, and will bring them unto the place that I have chosen to set my name there. He said, you remember, I remember what you said you'd do to us if we didn't obey, and we haven't, and you've done it. But also remember what you said, that if we'd return and if we that you'd gather us from those places you'd scattered us to, and you'd bring us back because of what you promised. Now these are thy servants and thy people, whom thou hast redeemed by thy great power and by thy strong hand. O Lord, I beseech thee, let now thine ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant, and to the prayer of thy servant, and to the prayer of thy servants who desire to fear thy name and prosper. I pray thee, thy servant, this day, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cupbearer. He just said, look, I know we've made a mess of this, But it's time to change. And there's a handful of us that are willing to do it. You know, it wasn't very many of them. It wasn't very many of them. Here's what he acknowledged. He acknowledged that sin was the problem. His sin. See, he checked out his own foundations and realized that even though his desire was to fix what was wrong, there was things that was in his own foundation that was going to have to be done away with and rebuilt. And he said, I'm willing to take whatever I'll pay whatever it takes. I'll do whatever work it requires. I will submit myself and I will obey. And you are right and I am wrong. And let's get started. You know, you can wallow around in self-pity only for so long before you're going to hold that against God. As if that's what he demands from you in order for him to make it all right. See, you listen to even Pence quote Ecclesiastes there. If my people which are called by my name will humble themselves and pray, then I'll hear from heaven. No, you skipped. You skipped part of it, sir. You know, humble yourselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways. Amen. I'll hear from heaven, I'll forgive their sins, and I'll heal their land. Mm-hmm. Right now, we got a bunch of fake Christians with their own righteousness trying to heal the land that they've corrupted in the first place, and they've left God out of it completely. Mm-hmm. And that's why you see the young people rising up saying, this ain't worked for 100 years, we're doing something different. Except they don't have God. So now they're going the other way, as hard as they can run, and it's all burning down around their own ears. God is not in the picture. They skipped the most important part. And that's acknowledging how bad the problem is and why it's there. It's because of your sin. You know, if I look at my own self and the breaches in my own foundation, if I'm honest, remember we talked about that last week, you've got to be honest. And it's not, well, you know, there's just some things I need to, you know, file the rough edges off of. No, it's sin. It's sin. This is the stuff that when you start digging in, sanctification starts boiling out the poison. It's not the stuff you can scrape off the top that's so easily got rid of when you get saved. This is the stuff that has to be rooted out and burned out of your soul. And it's done through tribulation, yeah, but it's also done with, see, everything's a choice. Sin's what separates men and God. And when you as a Christian feel him draw back, then you must acknowledge the fact that the only reason that he's doing it is because there's sin in your life. And now I must choose whether I want fellowship with him more than I want to purge this out of my soul. And once again, sin and righteousness is a choice. One is not, neither one of them are imputed to you at birth or at salvation. You must make a choice. You got to acknowledge it. Most of us have our own custom-made handbook for what qualifies as a sin. There's another big issue, because everybody makes up their own rules. And like I said about there's the black and there's the white, and then there's this middle, this broad middle ground where you get to decide for you and your family what is acceptable today but not tomorrow. What isn't acceptable today but we might do it tomorrow, but then we might not do it the next day. And you're just as confused as a termite in a yo-yo, and your kids are going to do just like they're doing now and say, hang it all, there ain't nothing to any of it. There's only one set of rules for what is and what isn't sin, and it's right here. And God's the one that said it. And everything else, he said, let every man be a liar. Okay? That's why honesty is the first step. You need to understand that sin in your life, left unattended like that, always results in the same thing. Whether it happens this week or this month or this year or 15 or 20 years from now when your kids grow up.
Right.
It always leaves the walls broken down and the gates burned.
Yes.
Always. There's no, it could use a new coat of paint. No, it's way worse than that. The damage is so corrosive that it leaves nothing but destruction in its wake. And the world, and the devil, and even lots of Christian influence now, or so-called, quotes, Christian influence, will tell you that radical change is not how you get things done. You must grow into it, and you must slowly do this so that, you know, that's why when you go to get off of drugs, there's another drug they give you to get you off this drug, and then once this one's out of the picture and you're hooked on methadone, then there's this other thing that they'll give you to slowly wean you off of it or whatever. And but what about all the people that you've heard about, the testimonies that you've heard about how that God dealt with them about this thing, and they laid it down, and then that was the end of the battle. There was a few choices they had to make after that, then that was it. Victory won.
Right.
Satan conquered. Yes. Sin gone. That particular thing eliminated.
Yes.
Why? Because they were honest about it, first of all. And second of all, because they realized it was their fault, not God's. And they had to have His help to beat it. And then they got up and went to work. They didn't just acknowledge all of these facts and then leave it all up to God to just perform some kind of magic to make it all disappear.
Right.
No, they got up. I mean, Nehemiah was fasted and he prayed and he was so sorrowful and he humbled himself and he repented and he admitted guilt about what happened. But then there came a day when they all got up and got their tools and their swords and their clothes and they went to Jerusalem and they started working on the wall.
Amen.
Okay? Now, you overkilled going the wrong way for a long time. You're going to have to get radical going the other way to start righting this ship. Have you ever been in a canoe and almost turned the thing over? Or turned the thing over? I have. Me and Zach was going down the Maury River one summer. And we got in a set of rapids and got in there, and there was a rock in the river, and there was a miscommunication, and we had that thing sideways, and the next thing you know, our tackle boxes and coolers and everything was floating down the river, and we're standing in 4 foot of water trying to get this 17-foot canoe up out of the water. And yeah, that was a bad ending to a real good day. Yeah. When the thing is about to go plumb over, you've got to make a big movement back the other way to get it back up. If you just barely put any effort to doing this, you're just going to go on down with the ship.
Yep.
You've lived a lifetime doing all this stuff, you know, building a certain way. I mean, you have a giant house built on a foundation and you've got to get to the footer down there to fix the problem, you know. Sometimes it takes literally, we're going to have to take all this apart to get to this problem, to fix it. You know, do you want to? No. One thing I hated worse than anything in the building industry was having to build something and then tear it apart and build it again. You know, that always was a result of miscommunication or lack of vision on somebody's part. But I hated it. It was one of the reasons why I decided to find something else to do for a living. I'm not joking, because I could not bear to build something and there it is. It's done. It's right. Solid. And then somebody comes in and says, I really would like that door to be a foot that way. What? And then tear it all out again? Nah. I never liked Sawzalls for that reason, because they're only for tearing out stuff and having to redo it. Well, let me let you in on a little secret. God does make beauty out of ashes more often than not. But have you ever considered the thought that maybe He would like to not have to work with broken things every once in a while?
Absolutely.
Of course He would.
Yes.
And that's why He's given us a book full of ways to be proactive to keep this from getting so far gone that you got to tear it all down to start over again. All right, Nehemiah recognized why God's judgment had fallen. He didn't exclude himself and his family from fault, even though he was seemingly one of the very few trying to do right. And he didn't sugarcoat it. He called it the worst thing that he could, and it was sin. He didn't say, you know, we made some bad calls on a couple of battles back there. No, it was sin against God and His righteousness and His commandments and judgments and precepts. And now we're going to do something different. He didn't stop at just acknowledging the problem or owning it even. He started doing something about the outcome of his disobedience to God, which was rebuilding. You got to start somewhere. I mean, every one of us has either found ourselves in this situation before, or maybe you're just starting to see it, or maybe you're early on in the game and you're starting to realize, hey, maybe I'm doing this the wrong, maybe I've took the wrong exit already and I am not doing what I'm supposed to do. You know, whatever stage you find yourself in this situation, the fact remains that just acknowledging that there's a problem and you're the reason why isn't going to fix it. You got to start. You got to pick your tools up and get going. There was nothing but rubble to work with for a while. There was a lot of cleanup had to take place before rebuilding could happen. Mm-hmm. But it was 100% necessary to the process.
Yes.
That you cannot fix, you know, a wall that is, you know, rotten from decay and from a water leak or something like that. You can't just put new siding on it and it's fixed. You can't just put new sheet right. No, you got to tear it out and tear out the insulation that's full of water and tear out whatever wood is rotted and get rid of the bugs that's in there. And that's how it is in your life, in your spiritual life too. But in your own character, the fundamentals that are you, that like the poem, like the thing in the bulletin said about the things that you've took in all your life that have become what your fears are made of, what your strengths are made of, what your likes and dislikes are made of, what your convictions are made of. You've got to assess all that stuff. And if it don't line up with what God says and what His Word says, throw away your handbook and line it up with what God says. And then be willing to start rooting it out. Man, you're going to realize that there's a lot of rubble to clean. There's a lot of demolition that's got to take place before there can be rebuilding. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it was over in chapter 4. Yeah, but it came to pass. Now they're building, okay? They're there and they're cleaning up the wall and they're working on it. And they're all, you know, working as hard as they can. And it gives a list of all the different men who built on it and did their part. And this guy built this, and these people built that, and this family built this gate back, and this man, and all the way down through there. But it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, well, he was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. And he spake before his brethren and the army of Samaria and said, "What do these feeble Jews? Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of the rubbish which are burned?"
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes, that's what you have to do.
Yep, that's right.
And it just all depends on how determined you are to do the right thing. You will not be supported in this. Mm-hmm. You just need to understand that there's going to be a lot of people from church that are going to look at you and say, "Don't you think you're taking this a little too far?
Right.
Don't you think you're being a little too radical?"
Yeah.
I mean, what really is wrong with taking your kids there? I mean, for crying out loud, you want everybody to think you're a fanatic?
Yeah.
Yeah. That Sanballat thought that these feeble Jews were fanatics. It got to the point where they had to work with their swords on their side.
Yeah.
Trowel in one hand, sword in the other. And they says they couldn't rest, they couldn't sleep. They had a hard time, but they did it. Because it was more important than just laying down. I mean, they couldn't do it. It took every ounce of grit and strength and fight and determination from all of them to get it accomplished. And your fight to rebuild will be no different. Satan and all his workers will oppose you on every side. You need to be able and willing to recognize who they are. Even if it's you who's doing the opposing. You know, this ain't a one-sided coin. You know, have you ever looked at someone and thought, you know, I mean, I understand dressing modest, but come on, you really got to, you know, people are going to think you're Amish or something.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
I mean, literally.
Oh, yeah.
We've all thought that. And, but, you know, hey, I would rather err on the side of caution in a lot of things in my life. When I stand before God someday, I don't think He's ever going to condemn me for having tried to be too good.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean that.
Amen.
You know, that's all we're going to cover this week. But I'm just saying, you know, just acknowledging that there's a problem is only the beginning. If you stop there, then you'll quit and be way worse off than you were before. If you try to just patch it up, you're going to be way worse off than you were before. If you try to blame it on someone else and all that, you're going to be way worse off than you were before. Acknowledge what it is and how serious it is. Look, there's things in our lives that are sitting in this room today, all of us, that even at whatever stage of life you're at, whatever stage of your Christianity you're at, whether you're a child or you're an old man, there's things that if you don't address, there's a chance you might end your life someday never having fixed this and have to give account to God for it.
Yes.
I mean, if he's going to require at our hand every idle word we say, do you think he's not going to call up this stuff on the table and say, okay, you remember, you know, there was things I reminded you about, and there's things, there was hints I dropped, and there was pretty obvious things I gave you, and you just disregarded them or blamed them on someone else, or, you know, said I'm real sorry about that and just moved on with life and just learned to, you know, live with it.
Yep.
And that's not what I did that for. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what we got to do. Mm-hmm. Got to build it again.
Yep.
Build it again. We used to have chores when I lived at home, and we would, dishes was one of them, and I hated doing the dishes so bad. Hated it. But Mom had a rule, and it was steadfast, and I was the victim of it a bunch of times. But if you washed a sink full of dishes in anger, you were bound to miss something. And if she found one dish in the drainer that had a piece of food still left on it, the whole drainer got took back to the other side of the sink, and you did them all again.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's what you got to do with this situation here. You know, you got to build it all again. You just got to start over. Build it again. But it's worth it. It's the only way it'll work.